Welcome to Worlds Apart. The bigger the better, or the clumsier? BRICS' recent decision to more than double the number of its members has been met with both jubilation and condemnation. Some observers have argued that the enlargement may make the group more influential and effective, while others insist that it may dilute or even negate its whole purpose. Is safety and, more crucially, equitable development indeed in numbers? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Alexei Maslov, director of the Institute of Asian and African Studies at Moscow State University. So, Maslov, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk about BRICS because its enlargement, because unlike its founding members, the new BRICS participants, and I want to mention them for our audience, Argentina, Ethiopia, Egypt, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab Emirates, they're regional rather than global powers, and regional actors tend to be more limited, conditional, circumspect in how they throw their power around, how they make decisions. What do you think it may mean for the organization as it goes forward?
Well, first of all, BRICS is not an organization. That's very important because it's a platform, and it was considered as a platform for discussion initially. But right now, the nature of BRICS changed drastically. And the main idea of the collaboration between BRICS participants, it's a collaboration for the future world. And all these countries, they have a common global view, a global approach. Another very important point that the new participants or potential participants are major regional powers. So they don't need money. They don't need...
Well, just some of them do some need. Argentina, for example.
But look at the Saudi Arabia. They need a recognition, financial recognition. They need a platform for discussion for the future financial, trade, cooperation, banking cooperation. So they are ready to participate in the new BRICS bank. So it's a very, very new kind of bank and financial logistics. They need more reliable mechanism for cooperation. That's why such countries develop together.
Now, you outlined the motivation for the regional powers, but what about great powers? Because arguably what unites all of them, despite all their cultural, social, political differences, is sovereignty. And sovereignty is it's not just an aspiration. It's something that you either have or not. It's a value. It's also a liability. And not many countries have it. Not many countries even want it. Do you agree that regional powers in this regard are more limited than the great ones? And aren't the great ones now diluting their power by having to deal with these regional players who may have other alliances on the side?
Oh, the question is, what makes great power, a major power? Not just financial or, for example, military development. The main factor, how great power could affect to the world affairs, global affairs, or regional affairs. So, for example, we know a lot of very great financial economic powers that don't have any kind of effect to the world development. For example, Japan or any other countries. If we speak about the BRICS countries, different countries, for example, China, India, or Russia, they in general have different aspirations. But there is one very important common feeling: dissatisfaction of the present situation, present conditions.
And by that you mean the Western hegemony, I see.
Right, right. They want, first of all, they want to be a very important regional powers, but at the same time, they don't want to push forward the atomization of the world affairs, because regionalization and atomization, it's a different kind of,
Do you think the regional members who are joining BRICS now are sharing that dissatisfaction with sort of the Western way forward?
Absolutely, absolutely, because they want to develop the regions or the countries as the very important players in the world affairs, at the same time to support the national economies. Because for a long time, they were affected by the globalization, global trends and global financial mechanism. But right now, they put much more attention to the national development, financial, scientific, academic, educational, etc., etc. So they need much more regional support, but at the same, they want to be engaged to the common mechanism. So BRICS just to put a platform under all these aspirations.
I've heard somebody, one of the prominent Russian observers, suggest that with its expansion, BRICS has started a franchise, and what is being distributed under this franchise is not some concrete policy, but rather a policy mode, one that prioritizes sovereignty, but also prioritizes relational framework over immediate disagreements. So it's not only a sovereign decision making rooted in your national interest, but also understanding that relationship is something valuable. Do you agree with that?
Not relations, trust. Trust is much more reliable, is much more important.
What's the difference?
Oh, the difference is great, because look to the situation for COVID and everything that was connected to the pandemic. Each country tried to fight against COVID by itself. And none of the common mechanism was worked out, was bring to life, and it means that the, in spite of the many international organizations, there is a very high level of mistrust. And BRICS tried to put forward the idea of the trust just in several areas or several ideas, for example, financial or infrastructural projects. So connection, every country is connected with another country, so it's not something new. Something new, it's a trust. Another very important point that the BRICS is very flexible structure. There is not any very high different level of the membership, like in Shanghai Cooperation Organization. There is no observers or members, just participants. So you could participate to be engaged to the different mechanism, to different negotiations, but at the same time, not to put much attention or obligations to follow some rules, so that the flexibility is very attractive.
Now, you mentioned flexibility, and I think we live in times of relational freedom. I would even say geopolitical promiscuity, when many countries, you know, choose their partners situationally without long or strong commitments. And, you know, the choice of partner, you know, can be today, but it could be different tomorrow. What's the purpose then for BRICS existence at all? Because you mentioned that they have trust, but there's also some predictability within that structure. Why would you have it if you can agree everything on the bilateral basis?
Oh, well, yeah, we used to live in the world of plus and minus of different camps, pro-Western or pro-Eastern, pro-Chinese or pro-Russian. That's a very outdated approach to the world affairs. Look to the development of the BRICS. BRICS was brought to life when situation was completely different. Economic situation and political situation, for example, that time China raised very fast. India was on the top of its development, by the way, the same for Brazil, the same way for the South Africa. But today's situation completely changed. It's not a kind of a platform for the countries that in the state of transparent development. It's a platform for the country that is very connected to the idea of the non-proliferation of different kind of negative power in this world.
They and want by negative power, you mean, again, dominant, uniform?
Right. Isolation, against isolation, against fighting and crushing the trade system, world trade system. So all countries vote, for example, for the open frontiers for trade and financial. All countries vote for the open banking cooperation, for the open labor markets. So these countries are very different in the civilizational natures. But at the same time, they try to follow the same way for the open markets in the very unstable world.
Now, in one of your recent interviews, you wrote about BRICS now having to formulate not just the goals of their development, but the meanings of their development. And meaning is an existential category. It's far more profound than any practical goal. Do you think nations of such different cultures, backgrounds, systems can ever agree on such a thing as the meaning of social development?
Well, because we live in the world that was created by the trade, by the open frontiers. But it's a historical period that we already followed. And right now we should understand what are the meaning of the development of all our countries and of our all our efforts. Each country right now has its own concept of the development, Chinese, Russian, even the United States. But not all countries share the same idea. So we should understand what is common for every one of us and what is different. To be different is not a bad thing, but we should understand where there are frictions between us. So the main idea to formulate the meanings, the main ideas, what does it mean for us, the global world? What do we want? For example, for me, it's a way of, it's a idea of the open education, because if we are educated in a very high way, high level, it means that we can share the same ideas, the same ideals, and the same for the trade, that world should be open. But we can have still keep some frictions in the political understanding. That's not a bad thing. So,
well, and one can help resolve another. I mean, if you share a common language, it's easier to have a reasonable and reasoned argument over things that separate you.
Exactly. And one of the main ideas, what is the highest value in of this world?
And what is? I mean, you know, people have been asking that for millennia.
Right. For me, it's personal human development. So everything that should be done, it should be done for the raise of the quality of life of the individuals.
Well, interestingly, you lead me to my next question, and it's exactly on that subject, because your near namesake, Abraham Maslow, an American psychologist of Ukrainian descent, formulated the famous pyramid of needs, starting from physiological necessities and going all the way to self-actualization. Do you think that could be applied to collective psyches as well, if nations start thinking about not just development, you know, getting by, but the meaning behind that development? Doesn't it signify some new level in social progress?
Yes, I think so. Because so-called the basic meanings, the basic demand are already done. So all these countries are not in the not in the bad state. I mean, there is no stagnation in economics. There are different kind of different level of the development. But at the same time, all countries develop in different speed, and they have their own vision for the next development and for the next step. So the next step should be done in the way what is the future of the regional and communal development, because we have a so-called globalization, or we had globalization, but right now we have a communalization, the connection between different states.
Well, I would even say uniformity. I mean, like there's an insistence that there's a certain country that knows the way, and everybody else has to sort of cater to the needs of the enlightened one.
Oh, right, yes. But at the same time, not too much countries are really keen to be engaged to the uniformity. Communalization means that we could connect in some ways, at the same time disconnect in other ways. For example, we could not agree with the religious views, and there are a lot of friction in this way, but at the same time we can cooperate in the trade. So what the look at the present day situation. For example, if you look 10 years ago, who voted for the open trade frontiers? United States. And they say everything should be opened and transparent. But right now, United States put a lot of measures against China, Russia, Iran. So right now, China is voting for the open frontiers.
Well, that's a very interesting thought, but hold it for a couple of minutes. We have to take a very short break, but we will be back in just a few seconds. Stay tuned.
We are in Dagestan, one of the most ethnically and culturally diverse regions on the entire planet.
As you make your way through Dagestan, you will discover each region is known for its own unique arts and traditions.
Welcome back to Worlds Apart with Alexei Maslov, Director of the Institute of Asian and African Studies at Moscow State University. Mr. Maslov, before the break, we started talking about the differences that exist in the world and also, potential synergies. And even without this latest expansion of BRICS, there was a core disagreement at the base of BRICS, primarily between India and China. Those two countries also had very different views on how the organization or how the grouping should evolve in the future. Do you think those differences are now laid to rest, or do you think they may be exploited as the platform expands and perhaps there are some camps within it?
Unfortunately, I think that it's a legacy of history. So a lot of countries could not forget some problems that happened 100 years ago or 1,000 years ago. So the only way out from this situation is just to forget it for some period of time, because there are a lot of much more important steps that should be done. So that's why all this friction, for example, between China and India or India and Pakistan should be put apart from the modern
world. Should they really be put apart? Because, I mean, Russia and China also had, I think, roughly 8,000 border disagreements. Yeah. And yet there was a painstaking process of addressing those, and these countries now have a very different relationship from what they had, let's say, 20 years ago. Should it be put on hold, or rather, what is in the way of India and China, you know, coming together, looking at their border disputes and also looking at, you know, all the potential benefits that they're missing out?
Well, each case is very peculiar, is very individual. So it means that, for example, if we speak about the Russian-Chinese situation, many years ago, we had a lot of problems. But look at the present-day situation. All problems are already regulated by agreements and, first of all, by the communications. Russia and China learned how to go behind all these problems, because we have much more important final task and final goals.
Why do you think India and China haven't arrived there yet? Because they also have many potential gains from
Right, because they pretend to the same place in Asia. And Russia and China, they have a separate development. So it doesn't mean that China is much more important or less important than Russia. They pretend to be a different kind of regional powers. So, but at the same time, if we will be not able right now to regulate all this, or just to not regulate, but just to forget for a while some problems, it means that we cannot develop the level of the economic level of the countries.
You mentioned China, and that right now it's advocating similar values, similar approaches to what the United States stood for like 15 or 20 years ago, free trade, the separation of trade and politics, etc. Are you confident that sooner or later China will not adopt not only the values of the United States, but also its bare-knuckle, bully-like style of getting what it wants?
Well, no one knows future for sure. But at the same time, we can see that the situation in China and in India and in the United States for the last couple of years, or sometimes for the last couple of half a year, changed a lot. Look to the economic situation in China. We can see the visible sign of stagnation. It's not a crisis, but anyway, it's a problem. The only way how to get rid of all these problems just to develop much more active negotiations with neighboring countries like India or ASEAN countries. So the only way how to resolve all these questions is a cooperation. And if we can forget all these problems, I mean political problems or historical problems, this is the only way how we can get rid of all these situation.
Now, there were a couple of countries, Nigeria, Algeria, Indonesia, that were widely expected to make it into the first wave of expansion. But with some, there is now even a confusion whether they wanted it or not, whether they have applied for BRICS membership or not. Do you suspect any Western meddling in there?
Yes, I think so. I think that there is a very huge pressure to all these countries from Western world. Because BRICS, just for the last couple of years, tried to present or just to step by step to put forward the idea of the new world configuration that is stay outside of already existing blocks. And many countries, they follow this idea of the flexibility. But some countries are really afraid to be in several camps at the same time. So this simultaneous cooperation with different blocks could push country in the from the good connection with, for example, United States or China to the backyard of this world politics. From my point of view, why BRICS is much more effective than, for example, Shanghai Cooperation Organization? Because it's a much more flexible and soft way of cooperation.
But on the other hand, there's countries who are not yet ready or bold enough to join. They are still gaining all the benefits of being associated with BRICS members on bilateral basis or even on the group level.
Well, look. What BRICS could present to other countries? First of all, it's a cooperation in the infrastructure projects. That's the first point. And if you want to be engaged to all this project, you need money. So it means that you should address to the new BRICS bank. That's if countries could survive without it. Yes, they could cooperate without any.
But it's a valuable alternative source of investment. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's the idea. Another question. It's a question of the expertise. If you want to develop some logistics or infrastructure or railroads, you need new stuff. So how to get this experience? So you should invite someone or some groups or some big companies. So it's much more attractive to do it inside one organization or one platform. So it's a very first of all, it's a regional cooperation, but at the same time, it's much more effective than the global ideas without real effects.
Now, you mentioned the word expertise, and I want to rely on your African expertise to ask you particularly about Nigeria, because it's Africa's most populous country, which is now being actively courted by Washington. It's been in the news recently that Nigerian President Tinubu is the only African leader Joe Biden wants to meet on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly this month. And you know that Americans don't make such overtures lightly or without an agenda. What do you think is Western agenda here?
Well, Western agenda means, first of all, who invests to the local development, but at the same time, who invest in the local education? Who educate the local people in what language, using what kind of textbooks and what kind of technologies? So it means that if you are educated in the Western inside the Western standards, you in the future you will supply Western technologies. So Nigeria, it's not just a very populated country. It's according to the African standards, it's a very highly developed country. So that's why United States try to play a very specific role in this place.
Are they only in Nigeria, or are they also hoping to use Nigeria's connections within the continent to
Nigeria is a jumping point, a jumping board to other African countries. But at the same time, we have a lot of other players in Africa. For example, China, which control a lot of ports, seaports all around African seashore. At the same time, time, we can see the increasing of the Russian power, not as much as, for example, China, but at the same time, Russia could play a separate role, for example, in the agriculture production, in the supply agriculture of the grain production, etc., etc. So at the same time, and the education. So we, in the future, will have much more important players in Africa, and it means that Nigeria, as well as other African countries, will have much more choice.
Now, speaking about Russia's power, next year, BRICS rotating presidency is moving to Russia, and you already mentioned several areas where Russia could be helpful: education, agricultural expertise. Are there any other areas where Russia could contribute in a fair way, in a mutual way, to the development of BRICS and its new members?
Right. Besides that, we already spoke about, first of all, it's medicine and pharmaceutical cooperation and biopharm and other, including telemedicine. We already have a very, very good infrastructure for the telemedicine, and we could export it. At the same time, the most important point for Russian-African cooperation, it's education in very specific areas. For example, once again, it's a medicine, agriculture, and new agriculture.
Geology,
and new technologies, and for example, financial technologies. Look at the development of the leading Russian banks. I think that the digitalization of the Russian banks may be one of the best in the world.
Well, speaking of which, I guess that's the only question I have time for. This past summer, Russia hosted an African summit at which Vladimir Putin said that Moscow is also ready to offer the African continent the technologies of governance. And it's interesting because for many in the West, Russia is still associated with rampant corruption. But actually, if you look at the quality of public services in Russia, it has increased substantially. Do you think this is something that Russia or BRICS in general could be exporting, you know, new approaches to governance and new approaches to the meaning and the goals of development?
Yes, I think so. It's not just a kind of special training for the local administration. It's a completely reconstruction of the way of the state level thinking. For example, a lot of African countries, as well as Asian countries, they follow the idea of this called the dependent development. So it means that they depend from its whole state.
The more they depend on aid, the less they develop.
Yeah, I try to find a correct word. Yeah, but anyway, to be independent, it's not just how to develop economics. It's how to develop your mentality. So, and one of the very important Russian issue of development, it's a reconstruction of the mind. Look to the development of Russia for the last 5 years or 10 years. It's we put much more attention to the national ideas, national values. But at the same time, it was not a Russian idea to break all connections with other countries, because when you develop your own ideas, you could be not very pleasant to other countries. So to stay at your place, to be at your national ideas, it's very important. And first of all, it's very important for the state administration.
Yeah, it brings us back to your namesake, Abraham Maslow, that all development ultimately leads to self-actualization, both on the individual and national level. Mr. Maslow, it's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for this dynamic conversation. And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again on Worlds Apart. We'll be right back.